Get ready, golf lovers. The boys are teed up and ready to go. Backspin, thanks to Inside Golf.
Hello and welcome to Backspin, brought to you by Inside Golf Magazine, Australia's number one most read golfing publication. My name is Larry Canning. Gary Barter is sitting right next to me. Good morning, good afternoon, whatever it is, Gaz.
Hello, Larry. How are you?
Andy's across the sea of buttons. G'day, Andy's waving at us. Great show, Gaz.
Looking forward to this one.
We're just heading into the FedEx Cup Finals as we're recording this show. And who better to talk to than the caddy of Ulrik Potgieter, the possibly the most talked about young player in the world of golf at the moment. Ulrik has won, he lost the playoff early in the year on the PGA Tour. He's 20 years old, Gaz. He's won on the Korn Ferry Tour, set a record for the youngest to win there. Won after the runner-up earlier in the year, has now won since on the PGA Tour. He's number 43 going into the FedEx Cup, and we know that if he runs in the top 50, stays in the top 50, the world is his oyster for next year in terms of the elevated signature events.
Yeah, the majors.
Whatever you know. And if he gets into the top 30, now he's playing for 15 million. His caddy is Rance de Gruyser, and Rance is going to get a fair chunk of that, isn't he? We've got to think. And we've got Rance. He's going to be talking to us later in the show. We've also got Matthew Giles. Now, Matthew Giles, for listeners of some age, might remember Matt winning on the Australian PGA Tour, won the Victorian Open in 2013. He won tournaments in Europe. He played in America. He played in the PGA Corn Ferry Tour. Very fine player. And I think the World Junior Champion at one stage early in his career.
He won that at Torrey Pines.
Well, he's turned all this around and gone to something that requires far more intelligence than playing professional golf. He's now the New South Wales ACT South Australia sales manager for TrackMan, which is a fascinating item to study from a bloke my age, because it wasn't around, Gaz, when you and I were playing, but it's definitely a big part of your teaching, isn't it?
It's almost like you're expected when you're giving a golf lesson that you have TrackMan or some ball flight monitor.
It's all over the place.
It's everywhere.
Yeah. I tried the new Wilson Staff Model CB irons. Now, Wilson Golf is making a fairly substantial comeback onto the market, Gaz, the market of golf balls, golf clubs, drivers, hybrids, bags, everything. Massive brand, Wilson, as we know, but their golf clubs were a little quiet there for a number of years. They don't spend a lot of money on paying players to use their gear. In fact, they spend very little, as opposed to the TaylorMades and the Titleist and the Pings, Callaways. That doesn't make their golf club any less appealing. It was really fascinating to hit this club and just how soft and beautiful it felt. And I'll talk to her about that. We have a tip that you're going to tell us, but you're not prepared, are you? No. So I'm going to spring it on you. I think that's the way. That's when you work at your best, when someone springs something on you, Gaz.
Well, I was looking at those irons. They look nice.
Oh, they're beautiful. Yeah. And they're big enough. You know, they're not massive, but they're big enough.
They've got a really beautiful shape. I like them because they look they're sort of a long blade.
Yes.
As well, which I've always liked.
It's like a classic Wilson look. I used to use Wilson when I was a kid. So 1978, when I finished my apprenticeship, 1979 or 78, Wilson became my sponsor, my first ever sponsor. All this gear. I went over to play it in Asia with all this beautiful Wilson gear.
Because Brosnan sponsored a lot of the young players at that time.
That's right. Then I went on to Brosnan after that, then Simon. Yeah, anyway, that's boring because that's about me. Yeah. Gaz, we've just had the Women's Open, AIG Women's Open Championship, and I found that it was kind of riveting in a lot of ways. Maybe not the winner's name isn't one of the most familiar names in world golf. Yamashita. I have to call her Yamashita, not Yamashita, because people hate it. Yamashita was 11 under par. She won by two strokes from a charging Charlie Hull. Now, this was the fascinating bit for me, because Charlie Hull is an exciting prospect. She plays golf differently, doesn't she? If you've watched any of this tournament.
She's so aggressive.
But she works the ball beautifully. You can see the low sawn off follow through in the way she's rotating the club or keeping the face open or getting your hands in front to knock it down. She's from the old school, isn't she?
Very animated.
Yeah. And a wonderful striker. What do you make of a golf swing?
It's very dynamic. Like, she's definitely...
She's long. She's pretty long.
Yeah, quite aggressive. She's a fit girl. She has that X factor, doesn't she?
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, she definitely has that presence. And she's been close a couple of times.
Yeah.
For sure.
Four runner-ups in majors.
Yeah.
So her time's coming. She's now, I think, going to have that horrible brand of being the best player in the world not to have won a major. She's probably carrying that now, I'd say.
And Steph Kyriakou?
Gina Thittaker might be the only one that could have won more majors than Charlie Hull, but hasn't won yet. But yes, Steffi Kyriakou, great finish. Did you see her play the first hole on Sunday?
No.
Nice drive down the fairway, snap hook hybrid out of bounds, took triple and played, and then bogeyed, I think, the third. So four over after three, shot 71 on a howling gale. She got the worst of the weather. Fantastic round of golf, and that's gutsy. So she finished in the top 10, which is brilliant for her. Mm. Good player. One to watch.
Amazing player.
Going to be winning in the US PGA Tour soon. We also saw Cameron Young, Gaz. Now, this is the guy 2 or 3 years ago who was bobbing up on the PGA Tour nearly every week, and then majors had come around, and there was Cameron Young on the last group, or second last group. He had an amazing record without winning in such a hurry. He burst onto the scene. In fact, he was the guy that came closest to Cam Smith when he won the British Open at St Andrews. That was Cam Young.
Yeah, well, he's definitely had trouble getting it done.
Hasn't he?
Like, it's incredible how many events he's been up there, and he just hasn't been able to get that W.
Mm. So
he did.
He did.
And he did it, what, by 6 shots?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Clearly he's just decimated that field. The last day he started bogey, and then he had 5 birdies in a row.
Yep.
So, and he bogeyed 16 and 17. So
we're talking about the Wyndham Championship, of course. Yeah. This is the last tournament before.
And I think they said that he's the 1,000th winner.
Yeah, isn't that extraordinary?
On the PGA Tour.
Yeah. It'd be interesting to see what happens now with him, won't it? We often see someone, the breakthrough for a life-changing or a career-changing victory, and then vanish for a few months. Or they go berserk, go nuts, and just clean up everything.
I reckon he'll go well.
I reckon he will too.
There you go. That's my tip.
Would you nearly pick him in the FedEx Cup?
I've got to tell you, he's a quality player, and he clearly can play big championships well. Yeah. We'll see.
You ride a cup possibly too.
They got a lot to play for.
Yeah. That'll be interesting to see who plays ride a cup actually coming up. Keegan Bradley, will he pick himself, guys?
I'd say not.
Oh, really?
No, I'd say not, because he's not. Yeah, I would say not.
I'm going to say yes.
Okay, well,
I'm going to say he's going to be under too much pressure from his fellow players. He is a bulldog in that environment. He's the Ian Poulter of America, I reckon, Keegan Bradley.
Oh, no, he's just a competitive animal.
Yeah.
They love that. Yeah.
Yeah, he'll play. He'll captain and he'll play, which can be done. President's Cup did it in Australia with Tiger played and captained. Can be done. Mm. Vice captains. So, guys, we'll be back with Rance DeGrusso right after this.
You're tuned to Backspin. 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 With Larry Canning and Gary Barter.
Well, as we said, guys, we spoke to Rance DeGrusso 6 months ago, in fact, 7 months ago, in January, when he first got the gig to caddy for one Ulrich Potgieter, arguably, not even arguably, the hottest player and young player in the world, I would say.
Oh, he's incredible.
Rance is on the line. Here he is. Yeah. G'day, Rance. How are you, mate? Welcome to Backspin.
G'day, boys. Yeah. Thanks for having me again.
No, oh, thanks for picking up.
Yeah.
We didn't think you would. Now you're becoming more famous.
Yeah.
All that TV time you're getting.
Yeah. Well, we have to go through his agent next week, probably.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mark McCormack. Now, Rance, we're on the eve of the FedEx Cup playoffs. Now, this is a very exciting time for those who are in it, and your man is well and truly in the mix, number 43, I believe, on the list. You're heading in. What's the vibe, mate? What's the feeling?
What is the feeling? Well, yeah, 7-man field this week, so it's we had the first day of prep today. So, yeah, it's pretty quiet. Strong golf course. We got 9 holes in today. The course has been redone from last year. So,
is it still a golf course that requires really good driving? What's the name of the course?
Question: what's the name of the golf course? I just know the sponsors.
Wealthy.
Cups.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. That's all you need to know. That's all you need to say, mate. Saying all the right things.
I only know sponsors. Yeah.
Good boy.
It's a strong golf course. Being the FedEx Cup finals, so there's not going to be many drivers for Aldrich with his strength.
Oh, really? That's a shame.
Well, we put a new sort of strong hybrid in today, so it's going as long as par there, 3 woods, so that's fine.
Gary, you just sort of ummed and ahed there about he's going to take the driver.
I just know over the years, Memphis is really a really great golf course if you drive the ball well.
But people would say
it's hot too in the rents. It's real hot there
because Aldrich can hit a hybrid as far as most drivers.
It's very, very warm.
Yeah, the point I'm making is if Aldrich can hit a hybrid as far as most people hit a driver, you would think he's going to be hitting it straighter. Therefore, hitting more fairways, still 200 and whatever, 300 whatever yardage, but being able to hit the fairway because it's a 43-inch hybrid instead of a 42-inch hybrid.
Yeah.
The plus for us is the greens are very firm, being recently renovated, and now he's a high-spin player.
Yeah,
we've got a golf ball in. I feel like it's really up our alley this week.
What gear does he use, Rance, just as a bit of an offside question?
Well, funny, Yates, he's full tightless, but the week of his Rocket Mortgage win, I rocked up Monday, every single club plus the ball was new, except harder.
Fair dinkum.
He was just struggling with, he had ever tightless blades with a normal X ball.
Yep.
But every now and again, he would just get this flat one, what would drop about 500 RPMs and spin, and he would fly greens.
Yeah, okay.
And now they've got a new ball and these V grooves. What's just changed the game, really?
Oh, is that right?
For him, yeah.
So that's just for him.
Is it still titleist gear, though?
It is, yes.
Okay.
I think there's about, don't quote me here, but I think there's only three guys on tour who use the Pro V1 Plus.
The V grooves and the irons, are they many people? Is that just a stock standard groove for the particular iron?
It is. It is, yes. Okay. But he's just always used the traditional blade iron, and it just with his high speed wasn't helping him.
Okay.
Yeah, because I saw on his stats, his second stroke's going off the tee, first in distance, and obviously you, being a caddy, I could see how hard you're working. I just noticed in that playoff, just the interaction between you and Aldrich, you know, wheel, wind, you've got his shot shape, you've got to figure out his adrenaline. It's when you really make your money, isn't it? That at that point in time, you can see you're really working hard. With him being such a high-speed player, controlling the, you know, his distance with an iron shot, especially under pressure like that, must be, well, it'd be quite challenging.
Yeah, it's with his speed, it's just magnified. He's essentially miss, or if you're slightly off. So if I'm working for a player with 115 swing speed, I could probably do a half, you know, average job and get away with it. But with Aldrich, it's magnified. So, yeah, it is stressful at times.
Is he a good listener, Rance?
Mate, he's a great – I know he's my boss, and I've got to have it. He's a great kid. He's got a fantastic golf IQ, obviously being a PGA Tour winner now. But and he listens and he's open, and he's got a sort of a growth mentality. So,
yeah.
He looks very mature. Like, you can't really get any more heat than in those playoffs. You've been in two.
Yes.
And the one you lost originally in...
Oh, I was unlucky, wasn't it?
In Mexico, that driver that Campbell hit. I just kept replaying that. I couldn't...
Why did you do that to yourself?
Like, no, it was like Caddyshack. It was seriously like you had a mate 30 foot up a tree, 50 yards in, and you've signaled, you've sort of given him the indication, chuck it out now.
Yeah.
You don't leave it too late. It looks a bit obvious. Yeah.
It was unbelievable.
But, yeah, it was incredible.
The timing of the chuck is the key.
Funny story, actually. We played the John Deere Classic recently, and it was like the Tuesday, and we get to the first tee, and we're playing one of the other boys, and next minute Brian Campbell comes to the tee, and he goes, "Hey, boys, do you think I could play with you?" "Not a problem." And then the other guy we're playing with goes, "Oh, you guys talking terms?" As a bit of a joke, like that cracked the ice. So we walked down the first hole. One of the guys, Brian, just goes, "Yeah, I just bought a new house." And
I'm rubbing it in.
Got balls done and everything. And he goes, "Oh, what floors did you get?" And he goes, "I got bamboo hard floors."
Oh, God.
We had a giggle, but yeah.
That is so good.
Is it a good community, the PGA Tour? Is Aldrich okay in that environment because he's so young?
He's probably struggled a little bit because there's not many South Africans out here anymore. And Aussies again. And then there's essentially been two tours as well, PGA Tour and the PGA B Tour to a certain degree. So he's been so young, he's probably struggled a little bit with networking with people and stuff. But when he's on the golf course, he's loving it, you know, in the tournament. Yeah.
It's a big couple of weeks for you, though, isn't it? Because he's 43rd. You definitely want to finish in the top 50. Ideally, you'd like to make the Tour Championship, the top 30. But all the benefits moving forward next year for both of you, it's an incredible, you know, incredible time and an important time.
Yes. Yeah. For the viewers who don't know, obviously the top 50, if you get to the second week, you get all the elevated PGA Tour events next year. Okay, so there is a bit riding on this week.
And he can be hot and cold, Aldrich. Like, Larry and I were looking at his year, and he's missed quite a few cuts.
He's missed a lot of cuts, Rance, hasn't he?
Yes. It's been every week having a new course. He's never seen the Florida swing, and then as it moves around the turfs and all that, he really struggled. So he's kind of still developing his skills, but playing on the bigger stage. So that's where the missed cuts are coming from.
I guess also having won, I know leading up to the win, there was a couple of some missed cuts as well, but when you get to the, so now he's got a 2-year card at the very least, he can sort of freewheel, and if he's still 20. I know you're saying he's got a good golfing IQ, but if he's 20 and he's allowed to freewheel, do you find yourself just slipping the handbrake on occasionally and saying, well, just a sec, you know, let's just make the cut, and then if we're on the edge, and then we'll go nuts on the weekend or something? Do you find yourself doing that?
Maybe situational, coming down to the sort of last few holes potentially.
Yep.
But really, to play your best form of golf, you just got to play freely and try to hit the shot in front of you. And the guys are so good here. So if you play a bit too safe, you don't get anywhere anyway.
I can't imagine him playing anything. So is he very aggressive? Is he by mindset?
Very.
Yeah, okay.
Extremely aggressive, yeah.
So, Rance, you're obviously a golf pro and you've seen best players in the world play over multiple years. Other than Aldrich, who impresses you out there? Like, have you seen, other than, say, Scottie Scheffler, are there some players that you look at and go, gee, that guy's really good? Like, he's got a great swing, he's a great ball striker, or are they all pretty good over there?
Yeah, well, a guy you had a lot of time with, Gaz. I find, like, obviously, if you go on the range and you see these guys who just stripe it and all that, but after a while, that kind of wears off, and I'm the ability to just to score.
Yep.
And that's JJ Spawn.
Yeah.
Is that right? Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I just find, like, amazing iron player, controls his ball amazingly, and then work coming off that, like a Russell Henley, like the shorter guys of the tour, but how they work their ball around a golf course, I find pretty impressive.
I've known JJ for, it's got to be since 2012-13, because he'd play a lot of practice rounds with Matt, Adam Scott, and he was just a kid from California that, you know, never had this sort of stellar college background. He went and got his Canadian tour card back in the day, and then through that he got status to play on the nationwide tour. He never had this sort
he's
of
built the blocks,
exciting pathway, but we always thought how good does JJ hit the golf ball? Like what a beautiful ball striker. He never had that X factor, that distance that get people excited, but the inside the ropes, like what you and I look for, like controlling his distance, controlling his trajectory, controlling his spin, no weakness in his game. And then as time goes by and getting a bit of confidence and belief, there, he wins the US Open.
Yeah, I think what you said there, like spectators looking at him, they don't really appreciate it because they look for like a Sam Burns, incredible player, watch the compression, you know, driver. You could watch that all day. But inside the rope, sort of like kudos from the other fellow players and caddies, like JJ and Russell Henley, that short hitting golf still, you know, it still prevails.
Yeah, and now we've got the ball rollback that you've got to deal with at some point, or maybe not have to deal with.
Yeah, we'll see, hey.
Yeah, have you heard anything, Rance, about it?
I heard a rumour that they've got a ball sorted, ready to go.
Oh, is that right?
Because there's the talk is guys like Brian Harman, JJ Spawn, those sort of, well, JJ's, he's not that sure, but it's Brian Harman, they're sort of saying that might put those guys out.
Really?
Well, it's sort of,
I thought it's bringing the pot guiders back to them, to Spawn.
No, they reckon that relativity-wise, the guys that are at Aldrich's speed, they're not going to lose as much distance relative-wise to the guys.
That makes no sense then, does it?
What have you heard, Rance, about the ball? Like, what is it, losing 11 yards or something? Or it's...
I haven't heard much. All I heard is, like, Titleist, they make their money off that golf ball. They're so far ahead of everyone else kind of in the R&D ball sort of situation.
And then you've got the different associations that can either implement the change or not. And then we might get to the point where the PGA Tour plays the current ball, but when the guys go to the majors, they might have to play the conforming ball, which is crazy.
That could be, have two different stock numbers, new ball, old ball.
Oh, well.
Just don't want to mix them up.
Oh, that's going to be huge, isn't it, if they mix it up? That's all. Yeah. Imagine at a Ryder Cup or something. Yeah. Oh, that'd be great.
Oh, God.
Where Seve, bring back Seve and Azinger and all the arguing, bloody Jimenez. And, beautiful. I love a blue. When I'm not in it. Yeah. Rance, we'd love to talk to you again.
Maybe after the FedEx Cup.
Yeah. Well, maybe even during.
Well, maybe if you
if you're available, mate, it'd be beautiful. Because it's a real insight for
unless you have a win or something, we could give you a call. But
ring when you've had a couple of beers. That'd be even better.
It's great to keep in touch with, you know, especially someone that's so close to us.
Oh yeah, inside the ropes.
Not just
with
you,
but
also Aldrich, who has spent time in Australia and one of the most exciting young players in the world. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah.
And how mature he looks. And
thanks, Rance.
So, mate, we really appreciate you.
Fantastic. Yeah, we're definitely going to be in your ear. I'm sorry. But be warned. We're going to be all over you.
Not a problem, boys.
You're a bloody ripper. Thanks, Rance.
You, mate.
Cheers, mate.
See you, mate. Bye.
Cheers, guys.
Backspin with Larry Canning and Gary Barter.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I like that interview with Rance. Gaz, he's got some insight. He's out there. He's a good guy, isn't he?
Yeah, he's a great guy. He's really intelligent, and he's very, very, I would say, thought-provoking. He's sort of, you ask him a question, he can look at you sometimes and because he's thinking about how to answer it.
Yeah,
but yeah, very witty. He's a great guy. I've known him for a long time. But he's very serious about his role as a caddy, which back in the day, it was the guy that just grabbed your bag. And I think with Rance too, he's a great mentor also for the players. He's a great guy to talk to. It sort of encompasses a lot of roles, being a good caddy, a bit of a psychologist.
Interesting what he was saying about the spin rate, isn't it, that Aldrich generates and how hard that is to control. And I am not the coach that you are, but with Aldrich's grip, that incredibly strong grip, that's hanging on like grim death, isn't it? It's like hanging onto a rope when you're hanging off a cliff, isn't it? To stop the club from going left.
Oh, noted about it. It's definitely...
Which is going to generate a more downward blow stream and more...
Well, it's definitely a component that's going to, you know, get the ball to come out a little bit hotter.
Yeah, yeah.
But the adrenaline, a lot of those things to manage.
Mm.
But like anything, Rance has been doing it for a long time, and Ulrich's got a good guy there to help him navigate those tough situations, for sure.
We spoke about Matthew Giles in the intro. Matthew Giles is one of the best players, one of the best young players in the country at a time about 10 years ago.
He was right there with McIlroy and Jason Day. They were the other two players. I think they played the World Junior at the same time that Matthew Giles won the World Junior.
But he's gone from that now to the corporate world, which highlights the fact that, to me, that it's golf isn't the end-all and be-all. And if you're actually a smart guy like clearly Matthew is, there's other pathways in the game you can take without having to get up early and go to the gym and you know, just be dedicated to the physicality of the game, isn't it?
Well, just also to the lifestyle, the travelling, the missing cuts, the stresses, the rigours of being on tour, and the, you know, not only in the financial challenges early on in your career as well.
And there's no room for intelligent people to be playing golf professionally, sure.
Well, maybe if you're intelligent, you sort of figure out that, what am I doing this for?
Yeah, well, that's it. Yeah, there it is. Never know. That makes us, you and I, really smart.
But I remember I was coaching Matt, and toward the end of his career, he went and played the PGA Tour event, a secondary PGA Tour event in the Northern Territory, and he finished top 10. And he basically, the amount that he won was what he spent to get there.
Yeah, yeah.
And stay there and play there. And it was that realization that, gee, unless you're playing a big tour outside Australia and you want to sort of have a normal lifestyle, it's a tough gig.
Well, he's now the New South Wales, ACT and South Australian sales manager for TrackMan, Gaz. And you know what? He's on the line right now. G'day, Matt. Welcome to Backspin, mate.
Hi, gents. Thanks very much for having me.
It's an extraordinary career. We're looking at yours. Very, very good player. Played in America, won the Victorian Open, junior champion, world junior champion, 2006.
Yeah, All-American number one team, which is huge unless you...
Yeah, that is big, isn't it?
That's really, really difficult to get in. They see that as the future nursery of the PGA Tour. Like if you're in that team, you're playing against the best college players in the world.
He's turned to the dark side, guys. He's gone corporate. He's intelligent. Well, Matt, tell us, since you stopped playing, what have you been doing? We know you're part of the TrackMan team, but tell us what you've been doing since you retired from golf.
Thanks, Larry. Look, I guess it's a bit of an interesting journey, and it's in some way, shape or form kind of coming full circle with my recent change and joining the TrackMan team, as you mentioned. But look, I finished playing my professional career at the end of 2017. So I turned pro in June of 2010. So I've probably had, you know, just over 7 years, 7.5 years on the pro circuit. And as you said, that was kind of in the States. That was throughout, obviously, Australasia, the Asian tour, a little bit in Europe as well. But so kind of got to a point where I was looking for something else, and professional golf was maybe no longer feasible at the end of 2017. Then I went into financial services. So I worked in financial services from basically the start of 2018 up until kind of right around two and a half months ago. And so I was in the mortgage space. Started in a kind of hybrid sales and product role, ended up running the product function across a couple of non-bank lenders in the Australian and New Zealand mortgage market. And as of the start of June, so just over 2 months ago, joined the TrackMan team as sales manager for New South Wales ACT and South Australia, and really enjoying that kind of change of scenery and obviously being back in the golf industry and rekindling a lot of, you know, friendships and relationships for people that I've known for 25 odd years, I guess.
So, yeah, it's a great fit because you've obviously got that credibility inside the ropes and obviously outside the ropes. So someone in that role, it has more weight. You know, clearly someone like you, TrackMan now, as with other launch monitors, but obviously TrackMan, it's always the one that most people talk about. I think it started in about year 2000. But the way the game is now, the climate of the game, Even at club level, I was talking to Larry today, how just me giving lessons during the week, most people want to see their numbers. Most people want to see their numbers on TrackMan. You've got indoor driving ranges now. You've got indoor hitting centers. You've got learning centers. Golf is a game that does take 5-6 hours by the time you drive to the course, play, get home. A lot of people are really getting an enjoyment out of seeing what TrackMan can offer. And it's not just the numbers. It's playing golf courses. It's creating programs to practice your golf. It's measuring your practice. It's really 2025. It's really, really accelerating, I think.
Gary holds the record, Matt, for world's longest questions. Just throw that.
Well, I don't know if that was a question or a sales pitch, but yeah, well, I think he did a good job. So, look, you're spot on. I mean, I think, yeah, look, the business was found in 2003, and I guess if you go, wow, where they've come in 22 years is pretty mind-blowing. And what you kind of ran through there, Gaz, is spot on. And I mean, even for myself, having the professional career and I guess being around, you know, the technology that's there, you'd have coached me throughout my time playing, so seeing that and understanding, you know, I guess the data parameters from a coaching perspective or a game improvement perspective, you know, I've had that knowledge there throughout the course of numerous years. But even just joining the business and in the couple of months that I've been with the team, the areas there that you spoke about, Gaz, in regards to, you know, indoor golf and seeing, you know, the growth of commercial sim centres here in obviously Sydney, but around the country, becoming more and more popular, and what we can provide in the way of, you know, data analytics and business and admin tools in basically running those facilities. We're seeing, you know, people establish 24/7 locations that, you know, people can go and just use that tech when it suits them. And you're spot on with exactly what you said, Gary. I mean, golf, you know, the traditional version of golf is obviously the 18 holes outside, and don't get me wrong, nothing better than that and being out there with your friends and having a stroll around. But look, if the weather's poor, and that's probably topical with all the rain we've had in Sydney recently, but, you know, if the weather's bad or you are time-strapped or, you know, you've got a young family, I've got two young boys myself, but, you know, it is difficult to get away for that time. And so to have that ability to, you know, go into an indoor environment, either work on your game, on the range, play virtual golf. I mean, we've got nearly 500 courses from around the world now. So, you know, PGA Tour venues, DP World venues, major championship venues, et cetera. So to have that ability to do that on your time, irrespective of when throughout the day that might be, irrespective of weather conditions that are there, I think that it just provides another avenue for people to, number one, get into the game, enjoy the game, and therefore that's, you know, that's beneficial for the industry in totality as we're getting more and more people kind of involved in the activity, which is fantastic.
But Matt, would it be fair to say that when it first came out, TrackMan, Gary said 2000, 2000 was it?
Was it 2000 or was it a bit later than that?
2003.
Okay.
Yeah, wow. Business founded 2003. It was going over 2 decades now.
It was mainly just PGA Tour players using it, wasn't it then? And I remember when I was teaching back then, people saying, look, I don't want to go on any machines or any, I just want a basic golf lesson. This has obviously changed. It's done a complete turnaround because the machines, and again, I hope this is fair to say, have become more technical, but the information is more simplified. So the average punter can actually use a TrackMan himself without the Gary Barters of the world telling him what that means, and it can help him, and he's actually now asking for it. Is that fair?
I think that's absolutely fair, and you're spot on. I mean, like anything with technology evolving and the business kind of constantly, you know, investing in R&D. Obviously, we are a Danish company, so headquarters is over in Copenhagen, but very, you know, broad, robust and diversified R&D program, and you're spot on. I mean, there's, you know, 40 plus parameters on TrackMan 4 that's there, but you can customize that to whatever you want to see and to whatever you're wanting to look at. And from a user perspective, the user interface, especially in those indoor environments where you've got effectively a touchscreen monitor to kind of launch that simulator. I mean, you can put up whatever data tiles you're looking to see. As you said, whether it's simply going to play the virtual golf as well, very easy user interface. And I think, as Gary said at the start of our call, the expectation that people have now when they do go for a lesson, or even if it is just a practice session themselves, I mean, the world is in any industry. I mean, I saw it in my financial services roles across product and sales, but any kind of sport environment now is obviously driven by data. And you see with what the, you know, teams and institutions do across NRL, AFL, rugby, soccer, et cetera, you know, we're not immune to that. And I think golf's such a incredibly unique sport where there are so many things that happen within a golf swing. There are so many things that happen within a putting stroke. And to be have that ability to obviously play back video, see that in real time, get that information on an app that's at the touch of you.
Well,
and tip of your fingers, I mean, it's great.
It was interesting because Finchie, I saw him do a podcast in Melbourne just recently because, as we know, he's just retired from broadcasting. There's a lot of a lot of Finchie on the net at the moment. But he was saying that he felt that if he had this technology back in the early 90s, he wouldn't have continued to battle away.
He would have helped.
Yeah, he said he would have felt that it would have really been, it would have isolated or been more direct in what his mistakes were.
It's the interpretation, isn't it?
And the battle with a coach, you've got the battle of the art of the game and the science. So if we look at the TrackMan as the science, but it's just factual data that you can't argue with it. If I was saying to Larry before we came on air that TrackMan has a feature, an AI feature called Tracy, and you can set TrackMan up, you can hit half a dozen shots, and TrackMan itself will crunch all the numbers and there's an algorithm at the end of it, and it will give you a priority of what it doesn't like. I said to Larry, you might hit half a dozen shots, and Tracy will then say to you,
go to the bar and have a beer.
yeah, give up or get another coach. It might say priority number one, face angle. Then it'll have secondary focus, path direction. It might have third focus, swing direction. It might have spin loft. It might have spin. But somebody who's just by themselves without a coach, whether they can diagnose that correctly, but at least it's pretty clear that it says that your face is between, 5 and 10 degrees open. Your face should be no more than 4 degrees open. It's something that they can fiddle with by themselves. And then if they had trouble with that, then they can get advice, clearly. But it's amazing technology now with even entry-level 3D that we're seeing at work with coaching. So
you're spot on. And it's one thing I would kind of make really clear to everyone listening is that, the technology that we're providing and where that, the team's obviously going with AI, biomechanics going forward, et cetera. It's never to replace in any way, shape or form, the PGA coaching professional. It's to simply supplement that lesson and to provide the insights and the data tools and the movement.
It's like an X-ray.
Exactly. Yeah.
At the end of the day, you go in for with a sore knee, you get an MRI. The MRI will give the specialist who's going to do the operation, it'll give him an exact insight into what he has to do. And that's really, ultimately, I think that's what Finchie was saying, is that, you can spend a lot of time chasing certain different problems or fields, but at least this technology, whether that's putting technology, which TrackMan still has on that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. It's
going to isolate more clearly what you need to focus on.
And you're right. And some people can be, I think of our times working together, Gary, as coach and player. I've probably always been a little bit of a field player, and people can look at, the ball flight, the nine kind of ball flights, and say, okay, well, yeah, hit a low draw, hit a high fade, whatever it might be. But there's so many ways that shot shape is actually created. And as you said, is that path, is that face, there's so many variables that are there. And so to have those insights to actually, it is data, as you said.
It's actually simple data. It's modern technology that's simplifying, isn't it? Simplifying the game. Absolutely. In that degree, it's just giving you black and white.
It's clear. It makes it clearer.
So how do I go about fixing it? And then you go from there.
Especially with you. You were chasing a fade yourself all your playing career, and you would hate a hook.
Yeah.
And
because a hook, I'd hear dollars, and I'd hear like a when you open up an old till and a bell rings, I'd hear that little ring every time I hit a hook, that little ring.
Yeah.
So I'm paying, that's cost me another
couple of thousand. That was the expense. You couldn't control that one.
That was 2,000 there. That would be 3,000. And I was starting to calculate, and this could cost me 4,000. It's a good, strong way to play, guys. You should try it.
That's always an interesting one, isn't it, when you're coming down, whether it's trying to make a cut or trying to, run top 10 in an event or win an event and whatnot. And if you're thinking dollars and cents rather than that shot in front of you, it's a tough mentality.
Yeah, I'd like to win.
I've been there, done that. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah, I reckon you. Yeah, well, you've won. I didn't. But, you'd like to win. But, geez, top five's going to be a nice check.
So, Matty, a golf course like the grass green, the golf clubs, are they starting to – like, we know the driving ranges, what Moore Park have put in a TrackMan in every bay. We've got Thornlee. Yep.
Moore Park's put a TrackMan in every bay. How many bays they got?
And Thornlee has done the same. Wow. And I know there's multiple other places that we could mention. But, look, obviously at the Australian Golf Club where you and I are at, we have – two dedicated buildings with TrackMan in the buildings, but are there any other golf clubs getting more calls for TrackMan to be put into the as part of their service to the members?
We are, yeah. And I think, look, I'd say as a blanket comment here, Australia is probably a long way behind other parts of the world as it relates to the adoption of that technology. So if you go, walk on a driving range throughout the UK, North America and whatnot, the presence of TrackMan tech and having that TrackMan range set up is far more common kind of in those geographical locations than it is here in Australia. But we're definitely on a growth path there, and there is a lot of demand and a lot of opportunities ahead for golf courses. And as you said, Gaz, it depends upon the type of facility that's there, but it might be a standalone range that's looking at, you know, providing that technology for the ability of revenue generation. Because as you said, when customers come to that range, they are then going to be more likely, they're going to stay there for longer, number one. They're going to be more likely to return because they're getting that data feedback. Mm. They're getting that information. They're linking that with their app on their phone and being able to say, okay, well, when I went there 3 weeks ago, this is what my numbers look like. This is what it is now. This is what it is, you know, when I checked it from 6 months, a year, et cetera. So you're getting that real-time feedback and then the historical data to look at the progress that you're making. So that's number one, I guess, in standalone range facility. And then from golf course perspective, spot on, it just really depends on, you know, the type of course that it is. And if you're simply looking at that through member service, what kind of that member is getting for their annual subscriptions that they're paying, they're paying at the club. Or on the flip side, in the more public kind of course environments as well, a revenue generation model, where, as I said, similar to the range, you know, that customer getting that information, getting that feedback and having, you know, being more prone to return again and again because they're actually seeing value in that in the sessions that they're having.
Matthew's way too smart to be a golf player.
He speaks very well, doesn't he?
Yeah, does.
No wonder you get the job after an interview.
You're very kind. Thanks, guys.
Matthew, I'm feeling so intimidated. I'm going to have to go. Yeah. But thanks for being part of the show, yeah. Matt. It was very insightful. But TrackMan, what's happening in the future with it, mate? Is there anything new that we can expect from TrackMan in the near future?
Look, I guess, you know, from an R&D perspective, our IO solution, which is the indoor optimized tech, you know, that's kind of been out in the market now just under a couple of years. So a lot of time and effort's obviously gone into establishing that, getting that up and running, number one, but then, you know, the subsequent releases for that going forward. So that's definitely been, I guess, front and center from an R&D perspective in more recent time.
Yep.
Since I've joined the business, everyone asked me when's TrackMan 5 coming out and whatnot. I don't have an answer on that. I haven't heard anything, any whispers in that respect. But, you know, we do truly believe that the TrackMan 4, you know, system that we have now and the functionality that that's providing for, as I said, the coach, the player, etc., is nearly as good as it's going to be. So like anything, there's just going to be refinements and additions, I guess, going forward. But, definitely indoor is a huge focal point for us. Green grass will always remain part of the foundation that's there and servicing coaches and players and golf clubs, as I said, but definitely, you know, the indoor space has taken up a bulk in recent times, for sure.
Matthew, thank you, mate. Matthew Giles, that was.
Thank you.
Listeners, thanks for being part of Backspin, Matt, and we'd love to get you back on.
Yeah, we'll get you back on again.
Thanks very much for your time, guys.
All right, mate.
Thanks, mate. Bye,
thank
mate.
You, bye.
Now, the Backspin product review.
Guys, as I mentioned in the intro, I have recently tried the new Wilson Staff CB irons. Now, I only tried them because I was up with my brother-in-law, Mark, up at the beautiful Coowinda Waters, and he's just got his new set of these Wilson babies, and they're about my spec. So we went out and played a few holes with them. We actually literally unwrapped them and went out and played a few holes. Mark's, you know, Mark, he's my brother-in-law. He's one of my best mates.
Yep. I'm sure he used them pretty well.
He actually did. He did them all right. He was fighting, trying to fade it, and then I just said, look, just hit a draw, mate, and then he just played the last five holes like Rory.
Wow.
He looks a bit like Rory, as you've seen him. He's 6'4", yep. 120 kilos.
He's a big boy.
Really, I have to say, and again, because they were specced up very similar to my own clubs, they were beautiful. They're buttery soft. They look great when you put them behind the ball. As we know, Wilson have a huge history in the game of golf. They were one of the biggest golfing manufacturers and most used pieces of equipment on the tour way back in our day, day.
I think that was right in that mid,
Greg Norman
mid,
used
mid late 70s and up into the 90s, like Wilson Ultras, Hague Ultras.
Hague Ultra.
They were just beautiful golf clubs. The best players in the world, many of them would use Wilson.
Oh, absolutely.
A big Wilson bag.
I mean, Langer winning the Masters
Wilson
with
staff
Wilson.
Bags. They were the first one that came out with Wilson staff. So, like McGregor?
Yeah.
Like a lot of these companies, they just went missing.
Yeah, but they're back. Wilson's back. Trust me, with this golf club, that'll bring them back. Their price point's a little bit beneath the Callaway's, Ping's, Titleist's, you know, those brands. So it's appealing for that reason, but sometimes if you can afford to buy Callaway's and Ping's, and you know, a lot of people can, and Titleist's, you're more inclined to buy that brand because of the brand name, whereas Wilson has just, you know, doesn't have that yet, that same appeal that, you know, it's the best golf club you can buy or one of.
Yeah, well,
it is.
Sam Snead, Arnold Palmer.
I reckon it is. Anyway, this iron was magnificent. Yeah. And I would definitely buy a set of these golf clubs if I needed to buy a set of clubs at all. There is a couple of other models in their range. They've got a Dynapower Forge, which is slightly more forgiving, which may be more appealing to me. I did hit a 4-iron in the Wilson Cavity Blades, and it went up in the air nicely. Again, the shaft was matched up, which brings in you must get them fitted if you're looking to buy a set of clubs. But and the driver, surprisingly good. Hit it past the one I've been using for a couple of years. So got nice spin numbers. Well, not numbers, but got a beautiful flight, got a nice draw flight.
As you said, that marketing space, where they've been in the past, we know they're great golf equipment.
Yeah, we do, yeah.
But just the marketing, we just get hammered with the other companies.
Yeah, because,
But it's worth giving, what you're saying, it's worth giving them a try.
Oh, definitely.
And, yeah.
They don't spend a lot of money on, because Wilson is a massive brand worldwide. The actual brand name is huge.
Yep.
TaylorMade only make golf clubs, as do Callaway, you know, as do Ping. So they're in a different sort of, let's call it space. I think they're definitely worth a try. Definitely have a go with the stronger Dynapower Forge, which is, the loft's a bit stronger, it's a bit more cavity. If you don't get the miss hit results out of these, I didn't miss hit too many. I was lucky that day, and they just feel like butter to me, the beautiful things. Anyway, give them a try. We'll be back after this, guys.
This Backspin product review was brought to you by Anthony Sturridge and Luke Besant from Measured Golf, and they are based in the Pro Shop at Highlands Golf Club, Mittagong, just an hour from Sydney. If you're looking to buy any equipment from a huge range of stock and need some advice, your first stop should be Measured Golf, Highlands Golf Club, Mittagong. That's measuredgolf@gmail.com.
Feeling hungry for a tasty tip? Here it is.
So, Gaz, it's time for a tip, and I know you're underprepared, which is not unusual. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to tell you about an Instagram I saw recently with you hitting some golf shots, and it's kind of working off the back of our chat with Matt Giles about TrackMan, because this was you hitting a shot out of two pieces of timber connected either end with a ball in the center of it, and those timber pieces were pretty close together, and you're hitting a shot, a ball, which is in the middle of the two bits of timber. And listeners, if you want to see this, have a crack. It's on Gary's Instagram, and didn't touch the bloody sides. I mean, how good is that? And what were you trying to show us, Gaz?
I was just practicing, and just something I've done for a long time. It's just really old school, just two bits of timber, and the tolerance isn't that great. It's only probably a couple of mil.
Very intolerant, I would say.
From heel to toe. And I just aim it at the target. And I know if I don't hit the edges, it's my swing's in pretty good order. And it's funny because I often get asked about that, you know, should you swing straight back and straight through? And it does look like that. But even on TrackMan, when I do that with the timber, even on TrackMan, it says that I'm about 3 degrees on the inside coming into the ball.
You're not saying you do that with the timber pieces hitting ball through while you're on TrackMan?
Yeah. Because I was interested myself.
You okay?
Well, I've got to find this stuff out, because you can't just sort of, like, for me, I was just happy to do it, but many people would ask me, so what are your numbers when you do that? Because you would think, looking at that, you would think, well, it must be a zero path. It must be a zero face. It must be 0, 0, 0. But that little 3 mil of tolerance, clearly for me, it allows my club to come on the inside by 3 degrees. My face angle was sort of a degree and a half open. So the face angle was slightly closed to the path. So the ball then can go reasonably straight. Like with a pitching shot that I did do on the Instagram, the amount of backspin is definitely fighting the amount of, you know, side curve of the ball. So the ball traveled fairly straight.
Had no choice, surely.
Yeah, but my tendency is, then I do get asked, well, do you miss the edges every time? Well, no, I don't. But I probably hit 15 shots the other day, and I'd probably hit the wood about 3 times. And my tendency is to hit it on the inside piece of the wood. Now, that gives me feedback. So what I was saying in the Instagram is that when you're practicing, it's great to get feedback. So that's a pretty industrial way of getting feedback.
Like, you're using your own clubs, or have you got a club you just use?
No, that's my club. No, it does. Look, it's
straight
pretty,
at your back.
The wood's pretty soft. Often people say you're going to hurt your hand. Nah, it's something that
the Titleist know. You're using their clubs to belt balls off wood and shit.
Oh, I'm sure they're happy to get the advertising.
Of course,
but
they are.
No, but I think with getting back for TrackMan, you can get the feedback without doing that. But that's what you and I came from, that era. Like, we'd putt through pieces of wood like that. Dave Pelt's putting track back in the day, very similar to that. So as long as you're getting feedback from your practice, that's my tip of the week.
Okay, good on you, Gaz. That's Gaz's tip. Now, we have a spit. We used to have a spit, Gaz, and we tried to turn positive with spits, didn't we? We tried to turn them around into something that is a good thing. If we couldn't think of anything crappy to say, I've got something I've got the shits about. I'm going to bring it up right after this break.
Backspin with Larry Canning and Gary Barter.
Goes my spit. Nothing against Incy Mehmet, the British on-course commentator. She does a fantastic job. When she's asked to do something, she pretty much has to do it by the producer. In this case, it was on-course interviews, players walking down off a tee in the Women's British Open, the final major championship of the year. One of the questions she asked, I can't remember the person she was talking to, was, do you have any tips for hitting the ball low? Now, this is a player who's in contention, one of the favourites to win possibly the biggest event in women's golf, been asked to give tips during the second round of the...
Can you imagine this?
And I've written a little parallel here. Can you imagine...
That's insane.
You, with a microphone, and you're at the tennis. You're at Wimbledon, goes. Venus Williams in the second round. It's windy, and they break after two games. You go up with a microphone, sit next to her. Oh, Venus, how you going? You all good? Yeah, my name's Gary. Can you help the listeners to work out how to hit that second serve with more spin? When you remove the racket from your head, you might get out of there with some of your limbs, right?
Wow.
So what is that? Women's golf isn't being taken seriously. It hasn't been, and it bloody well deserves to be.
It's about time
golf was recognised for what it is. The producer of that production, unlike Andy, who's very professional, should know a lot better than to do that in their biggest event, which just detracts. It detracts so much credibility from that Women's British Open, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. I found it interesting when, even on the PGA Tour, you were seeing that more often, players getting interviewed.
Which is bad enough.
And I remember that PGA Tour... they had a meeting with the players and they were trying to obviously improve the product, improve the insights into the viewers at home. But I've noticed that has died down a bit.
Mm.
It takes away the importance of competing, the importance of sport. It takes away
that. It's a major.
Yeah, it's just, no.
Grace Kim was another one that was interviewed. And Incy was talking about an avocado on toast that was her favourite breakfast. Did you have that this morning?
No, this is.
This is the same day.
You're making this up.
That's fair dinkum. It's fact. Avocado on toast, Grace. Tell me the benefits of avocado on toast.
Well, clearly they've got to fix that. It's just disgraceful.
Okay. Well, that's it. I've got that off my chest, guys.
Yeah, I didn't even know that you had that spit today, but I agree with it.
Yeah, okay. I reckon the majority of people listening would agree. I'd like to hear back on our Backspin Facebook page. Please let us know if you agree or disagree with what's going on with these on-course interviews. If it's a pro celebrity, fine. If it's a pro-am, fine. But a British Open, my God, no.
No.
Well, guys, let's finish on a happy note.
Yep.
Have you got one? Because I don't have any notes that are happy at the moment. Give us a happy note.
Well, the happy note is we've got the FedEx Cup Plus coming up.
And we've got Aldrich Potgieter. Yep. We call him Australia. We've got Jason Day and Cam Davis in there in the FedEx Cup.
And Min Woo.
Min Woo. So three Aussies.
Yep.
And Aldrich, who's a half. But now made it 70, so that's why it's a bit hard to get into. But anyway, it's FedEx Cup. We're looking forward to talking to Rance again during Aldrich Potgieter's massive surge to stardom. And we'd love to hear from Rance, who's going to be right there beside him, telling him to take a bit of spin off some of the shots. Thank you, listeners. Thanks for listening. Andy, Gaz, thanks for being part of the show. We'll see you very soon.